So basically, for one of the things that we found was interesting in chapter 2.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about chapter 1 of Lyell Statistics. How to Lyell Statistics. Chapter 1 is the sample with the built-in bias. And the first part talks about how the Yale men could, like, Yale graduates, they can lie about something like how much they make a year. And if they're doing well and they're doing not, just using the name of the school, right?
Yeah. And also, some people, with the statistics, people can lie, and then there would be a very small average of people. So, say, 4 out of 5 people say that they did well, and then there's that one person who didn't do well. And you wouldn't know because they could be hidden someplace or you wouldn't be able to access them. So it depends on how big or small the amount of people you test or see is.
Okay. And then we want to talk about sampling. And they use, for example, the barrel of beans. There's only like one way you could tell how many different types of beans are in it. And that's if you count them. But if you're sampling them, you're like, take a handful out and you'll see. You count what's in your hand and you try to figure out if those proportions in your hand will be the same within the barrel.
If the amount of beans that you pull out are large enough, then they would be able to cover what you wanted to understand. But if they're not, then you could accidentally mess up and it'd be a lot worse than making an educated guess based on the information that you have, which can mess up different statistics. Another interesting part about taking surveys is there's not always the possibility that people will tell you the truth. Like in the case where they had the magazine articles that they did a survey on was the true story of Harper's. And they said that one of them printed so many more, but other people said they read a lot more of the other ones. So they think that they lied, and which is interesting that people wouldn't tell the truth even though you go up to their door to find out.
Then they talked about how the average American brushes their teeth, which, like, most of the time when you hear about what the average American does, probably not what the average American does, because they talk about the tooth brushing teeth, and it was like they came up with a number like 1.02. They brush their teeth 1.02 times a day, which I don't think anybody can come up with that type of number. Like, how could you even find that out? And people can just tell you that they brush their teeth multiple times a day, even though they might not have brushed it at all. Like, they're not going to admit to you that they didn't brush their teeth while they're talking to you in your face.
Because in America, there's common hygiene to brush your teeth. People aren't going to tell you that they don't practice common hygiene. And sometimes you can actually see if you actually look at the person's teeth whether they brush them or not. There's a difference between someone saying they brush it all the time and their teeth are perfectly white, or someone saying they brush it all the time and they're completely yellow. Another part that was interesting was talking about the psychiatrist and his point of view about everyone being neurotic. But the thing is, when you're a psychiatrist, you only usually are a shrink or something to help crazy people. And you can't really make a reference or a sample about everyone when you only have a small sample about the small people that are farther away from the regular population.
They talked about the 1948 and 52 elections, how they telephoned people and they, like, got the results of the elections through, like, polling people on the phones, which isn't accurate all the time because they only poll, like, a certain group of people. So there may be, like, a Republican company polling all Republicans. So, of course, the Republican candidate would win. Or if it's a Democratic company polling Democrats, of course, the Democrat would win in that situation. So, like, polling. For the 1936 election, there was a magazine who had predicted the 1932 election completely correct, but for 1936, they polled people. I guess they polled, like, major Republicans because they had Al Flanden beating Franklin Roosevelt with electoral votes 370-161. And that was completely inaccurate because Roosevelt had 523. And Landon only had 8 electoral votes, so it really depends on who you poll.
When doing surveys, the people that you poll also vary. Like, if you, and there's a lot of bias being held, because sometimes if you're walking on the street trying to poll people, you ignore all the people who aren't in the street and they're at home, or if you're trying to poll people and you only get white people, you don't get the opinion of black people. And other things like interviewing people who are doing work, then you ignore everyone else. Or movie, people go to movie and then you ignore people who decide not to go to that, or nightclubbers. And it's interesting that depending on the amount of people you poll and who you poll, it's not as random, and then you don't get a good amount of information. And sometimes people do a bias because it's a lot easier and less expensive.
So it's really like...
Exactly.
It's really like no good way to poll people because you're never going to get accurate because you're not... accurate results because you're not getting the opinions of everybody, so...
I mean, you could do both of them by getting at least... You don't have to do it all at the same time. You could get indoors, outdoors, door-to-door, and then you combine them all together and you'd get a pretty good sample. Because you'd have a larger population and you wouldn't have just a small one, so it could represent everyone else as a whole. We believe that lying with statistics, or at least I believe, that lying with statistics is kind of annoying and kind of really bad to do because people who aren't sure and they aren't familiar with statistics, they don't know what to look for. And so if you present them some information and show them the statistics, they will believe it without knowing that they're believing the wrong thing. And
lying with statistics can be a good thing, but not in this case for chapter one, like the bias sampling, because you're not getting everybody into the like polling or whatever you're doing. But you can lie to statistics and use that to your advantage sometimes. So it's not completely bad.
Yeah, like I understand sometimes people want to lie because they want to sell their product and make their product better than others. But other times, if you're talking about something more accurate, like people brushing their teeth, I think that's something you don't need to lie about, and people should be able to know. Because that's something that relates to everyone, and buying or selling your product doesn't really have to do with everyone else. Okay. So basically, for one of the things that we found was interesting in chapter 2 of the lying of how to lie about statistics is that when it said that a group of people that are only 5 feet, and it's like an average, and you don't really need to know how the mean or the mode or anything, because all you need to know is the average of telling about the size of the person. But when you're trying to sell something, you have to know more than just the mean, the median, or the mode, or just the average, because you can't just sell something for a group of people for only the average, because only that average would be able to get the thing that you're doing.
And then you want to make a lot of money.
And making not a lot of money is never a good thing.
Yeah, so you can't lie with statistics with that part, because you need to know more than, as a salesperson, you need to know more than just the average, but the average, you don't need to know that much.
Yeah. And
if you just count how tall people are, you don't need to know anything but the average, because that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, and it's easier to look for something if you're looking for the right thing, and if you try and look for something and you're not looking for the right thing, then it doesn't turn out well. Yeah.
In the book, it says that science proves that, like, when you're flipping a coin, 80%, there's an 80% chance that heads will happen. Well, I think that's wrong because we all know that it's two possible outcomes, so there's a 50% chance of either one happening. But you won't be able to prove what the science says unless you like flip it a huge amount of times, which nobody's actually going to sit there and flip it a huge amount of times because we don't have the patience just to prove what science says is right. When we all know in our heads it's only two possible outcomes, so it's a 50% chance.
And also, there's always trial and error. Like, the scientists could tell you that it's 80% of the time would be either heads or tails, but what if they had made a mistake during that time and you wouldn't know? So they get 80%, then you could probably get, like, a 60 or 70% because you maybe got heads or you started on a different one, so it would make a different thing. Sometimes when statistics isn't used to lie or they're used to show you statistical things to make you think about something, having large numbers, like in the case with chapter 3, they're talking about vaccinations, and it said that 450 children were vaccinated in the community and 680 were not vaccinated, and then a huge epidemic swept through, and then the people who were vaccinated didn't contract the polio disease. And I think it's really interesting to tell that all these kids that are vaccinated, they didn't get it, and 680, which is a large number of kids, contracted polio from the epidemic. So it makes you think about it. It makes you want to get vaccinated if that was the cause of telling people the statistic.
Or are they just trying to get people to get vaccinated, even though it this may not even be true, so.
Yeah, and that's true. Because it's some.
They could be lying with statistics again, just so people go to the doctors, get vaccinated, when sometimes, like, I know the flu vaccine makes you sick sometimes, so.
Because it has, like, a small amount of the flu in it in order for your body to get used to it and have to attack it. So people get sick when they get vaccinated. Sometimes the needles that vaccinate you aren't clean either. But I guess they could have given you the 450 ratio of 680, and it turned out there's a lot more kids in the town, so.
Like she said, it's like, I'm sure it's not the only, they don't know how many kids didn't get vaccinated, because I'm sure they don't have every child, like, on record, saying this person didn't get vaccinated, this person didn't, like, they didn't have time to do all that.
There's pretty much a lot more people in the town than just kids, so there are probably a bunch of adults that didn't get vaccinated that they didn't show you, so, depending on who this was, the audience was, they should probably add more than just children. They should probably add adults to show a larger number and make it affect people a lot more.
To see if the vaccinations really do, like, help you. And I'm sure it's just not true. Why are the statistics going wrong? And there's another part in here that was really funny. It said you could tell how tall your child would go just by looking at the chart of their age. So there's, like, the average height of the children of certain ages on the chart, which wouldn't be accurate at all because kids grow at different rates. Not all kids, let's say, they say by like time you're 14, you should be like 5 foot. Not all children will just be 5 foot by time they're 14. They could be taller, they could be shorter. It's like showing the average height. The kids won't tell you how tall your child is.
Yeah, and other than things, there's all the other things that play into people getting taller because they might not eat the same thing. And sometimes if you're, like, say, one person's a vegetarian, one person eats a bunch of meat and drinks a lot of milk, which has all those added hormones in it, they would get taller than the person who doesn't have extra hormones because it doesn't make them taller. And so that would also change it. And then it could be the same height, but one could be, like, 6 foot, the other one could be, like, 5 foot. So it depends on everything that's happening. So averages aren't really a good thing to have when you're trying to choose something as a whole because not everyone follows the same path.
You gotta look at how tall their parents are. I know, like, people say that I should be taller because my dad is 6'4", and my mom's only 5'2". So, if I was to look at that chart, it says like 5 foot by 14. I wasn't 5 foot. Then. Well, I didn't reach 5 foot by 14. I don't think.
And there's a lot of things that affect the height. And I know that I'm not tall enough for the age that I'm supposed to be.
It's all not true. Chapter 5, there's a part where they're talking about the graphs. And like in the beginning, he has a graph that's like bunched up and it shows the growth over time in billions of dollars. But then on the next part, they change the proportion of the graph and then it's like the data's more spread out so it looks like it's growing more over time when it's really not. And then the other part, they have like the government payrolls going up. And it's like, on one end, it shows how it skyrockets up from October to December. But then on the other graph, it just shows it like it's going in a steady line. And it only increases a little bit. So it's like they were able to use that to their advantage.
I think it's kind of different from the person's perspective. Because if the reader is only quickly looking through something, they're not completely able to determine or try and falsify the information, so they might believe it. And so with the first one about the government's pay, or in like billions of dollars, they can cut off the graph and you can show whatever you want to show, but if the person is looking for something completely accurate, then they can find what they're looking for. And people cut off graphs so that they don't show the bad, because all they really want to show is good, so they can make a point and sell someone something. Another interesting part is visualization, trying to show two separate outcomes. There's ones about the amount of money that people make, and there's a foreign amount of $30 and American 60, and they illustrated it, and there's a small person with a small bag about the same size as he is. Then there's another one with a bag two times as tall as he is, and also two times as wide as he is. So it's different, because you're still getting the same impression, but you're making it seem like it's so much more.
it's like exaggerated because they have a bar graph that shows the same thing what the two money bags are supposed to be represented, and the bar graph shows that it is double, and it only shows like that it's two times the size. The bars are two times the size of each other, but on the other end, it's like completely exaggerated with the money bags.
Also, it shows a better visualization that doesn't show too much, like the small one underneath the graph. It shows the people are the same size, but one person has two money bags because the information is twice as much, and the other person has one bag, but on the other hand, it's like, he has like a saw, so I guess it shows that he actually does extra work. And the other one, it's like holding a saw and he has money in his hand.
Then they had another like visualization graph with a diminishing rhinoceros. And it said 15-15, they were like, there's a huge rhinoceros. And in 1936, it's very, very small. So it's like, it doesn't show the number, but it definitely does show that there are way more rhinoceros in 1550 than there were in 1936. So I think that's still part of the visualization graph. Even if it's exaggerated, it should show like how much more stuff was made in a different time.
And it also shows you in the times when they really need rhinoceros. I'm not sure why they're mass producing rhinoceros or if there's any biological effects on it. But it also has something about the cow. And I know that now we like have factories where we're mass producing cows in order to eat them. So I understand how there's a lot more. But I'm not sure how there's a lot more for the rhinoceros. Mm-hmm. One of the parts that also was interesting was the one about semi-attached figure. And they're trying to show something. But they say that the better or the worse the number, the more it shows how something could be better. Like for one, it says that bats have a good chance of the jobless legs, which is, we all know, not true, especially in the time that this book was written. And it says that there's a, 27% larger sample. And it's like different because blacks have a lot less percentage of the jobs, but if you show that there's a slight increase, it's a lot better because there'd be a lot less people having a job, and so the little bit of increase would make it seem so much better than nothing. So if you have a bad scenario, then it's better to have something than nothing because it shows that something is happening. It may not be as much.
But basically, all they're doing is using statistics to lie in their favor to make things look better for them.
Just to make something look equal so people can argue about it, but in reality, it's not actually equal. Still less.
Why this book is called How to Lie with Statistics. This part is really good. It says that more accidents occur in clear weather because there's more clear weather than foggy weather, which is true, but it also says that foggy weather is way more dangerous to driving. So just because it's more dangerous to driving, it doesn't mean it's going to be more accidents because clear weather occurs more than before, which is a good statistic.
And also because if something's more dangerous to drive in, then a lot of people will not drive in it and probably wait for the fog to pass by, so that might also be why there's a lot less accidents because there's nobody driving through it. So, and then clear weather happens like all the time. Like the only time we get foggy weather is probably like after rain or before we get rain or if there's complete humidity. But yeah, there's a lot more accidents in the weather that happens the most and not the one that happens the least. Another example to show how something happens more because there's a higher amount of people doing it. Like it says here that more people were killed by airplanes last year than in 1910. And I'm not sure exactly what time that is, but it's saying, and trying to make people think that modern airplanes may be more dangerous than the other ones, but then again, not many people probably rode airplanes because it weren't really developed well. So there can't be as many accidents if not as many people were riding it. And since there's so many more people riding it and so many more airplanes and being built and everything, and I'm pretty sure that a lot more people would have accidents than the people that don't actually get on an airplane. Because when the airplanes were just coming into existence, I'm pretty sure that not a lot of people wanted to ride them because it's probably really scary to ride something in the sky and you're not sure whether you'll be safe or not. So.
Especially since you don't really have control over an airplane, so that would... And plus, a lot of people might not have the money to ride airplanes back then.
Yeah,
and they weren't as advanced. As time goes on, things get more advanced. So those like two-seater airplanes that they had back in 1910 wouldn't fit like a whole bunch of people as much as they do now.
Yeah,
Yeah, and since if it fits like not as many people, then not as many people can die in an accident or be in an accident since there's not that many people in their plane.
So basically all chapter 2 talks about is the well chosen average, which is like, for one part of that section, they showed how the average may not be the most frequent number. That's why there's a mode. The mode, for example, in one part, there was like the average salary was like $5,700 or pay, I guess, per week. But that average didn't really, I guess, represent most of the people because the most frequent number at the mode was only $2,000. So the average, it may be well chosen to use for your advantage, but it's not really a good representation of anything.
Also, another thing about averages is showing with all the part where it says about the profit of the owners and the wages for the employees. One of the data points it has is that the employee's wage is $2,200, while the salary and the profit of the owners is $26,000, which is the average, but it's a pretty high amount. And I'm pretty sure that even though the average is $2,200, the employees may make less, but the salary owners or whatever they are, they probably either make more or just a little bit under $26,000, which is a lot. And they also had a different one for the average wage of salary, which is $2,000, and another thing, like the same thing. The average wage of the profit of the owners is $5,000, so they're always seem to be making a lot more than they pay the other people. Okay, so the question asked is basically what questions we need to ask when we're looking at averages, and I believe that when you're looking at averages, the questions you should be asking is probably for facts about how much people actually get paid and not what people assume they may get paid because of the amount that is paid whole through all the people, and also a range from the highest and lowest amount so you can also get a better idea and find out the mean and how much people are being paid.
And also when you're looking at the average, you need to see what the mode is because sometimes, well, all the time, average is just in all the numbers added up and divided by the amount of numbers total there are. So that doesn't really give you a clear representation of anything. Most of the time it does, but sometimes it doesn't. So you need to know the mode because the mode is the most frequent number, and the mode can sometimes be higher than the average, and in some cases it's lower than the average. So if the mode is lower than the average, then the average really doesn't, well, I personally don't think it represents the data properly.
So another interesting thing in Chapter 7 about the semi-attached figure was one that talks about when they're trying to use propaganda to make people want to do something other than the other. And one thing that they talked about was the death rate in the Navy during the Spanish-American War. And it said that it was 9 per 1,000, which is not that much. But also for civilians in New York during the same period, it was 16 per 1,000. And they used that to try and get people and tell them that it's safer to be in the Navy than without because you die more if you're not in the Navy. But when you look at it again, you think about the fact that the people in the Navy, they are well-trained soldiers, and they go through like rigorous efforts in order to train, in order not to die during the Navy. So I'm pretty sure that's the point. Keep fighting. And the civilians, they aren't trained well, and so they could easily find themselves in trouble and die, which is why there's a higher number. And also, because it's civilians, there's women and children and toddlers that are also a part of the equation. So they didn't take people out, and the Navy's only like probably young boys that are fit. So I'm pretty sure there's not old men that could die.
And they don't even say how people are dying, and like the civilians are dying. We know how the Navy are dying in combat, but how are the civilians dying? They have different deaths, so of course it's going to be higher.
Yeah, and about the civilians dying, it could be like just a heart attack. It doesn't say that they were killed by some homicide or something like that.
And these could be old people, like on their last legs.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, so another thing in the semi-attached figures is about how a governor, Republican Governor Dewey, was elected as the governor in 1942, and it said that the minimum teacher salary at the district was as low as $900 a year, and after he did some things with legislature in 1947, he appropriated $32 million out of state surplus, and then after that, it has a result of New York range from $2,500 to $5,225.
And this looked like it was a really, really big improvement, but in all actuality, it wasn't. Like, a $2,500 salary is just the salary and like the lowest, and it was the lowest salary in the rural districts. But the $5,325 was like the rank salary in New York City alone. So he may have did good for New York City, but it really wasn't like the best thing that happened in New York. As they're saying, this part was supposed to be in a campaign, so they were using his numbers to an advantage, even though the numbers that they used, what they were using them to say wasn't true. Like, it didn't really make things that much difference in all the other places in New York, except for the big city, which is New York City.
In Paul's talk, chapter 8, is talking about how there can be unwarranted assumptions about things, and they're saying that this legend it's that says it says that V follows A and A causes B, and in the survey that they had was about smoking and low grades, and they were saying how like A causes B, like someone who smokes a lot gets low grades, or people who get low grades smoke a lot. So either one could cause one, but if without the proper evidence of exactly everything, there's could be a third factor that they're just socially necessary or something that they just wants them to smoke more, which could change things. And sometimes propagandists, when they're trying to sell things and tell you stuff, they don't care about the third factor. They just want to make it seem like what they're telling you is the one to listen to.
Then in chapter 9, they made up a new word called statisticulate. And that's just manipulating people with statistically. So the title of this book is like how to lie with statistics. So they took that and made this word.
There's another fallacy, the post-hoc fallacy, about stock. And they're saying that the more money you make, the more stock you buy. And the more stock you buy, the more income you get. And sometimes one cannot always produce the other. Because sometimes if you make a lot of money and buy a lot of stocks, it could not provide you with enough money to make more. And sometimes the more stock you buy, the less money you make. So it just depends on what actually happens and what your circumstances.
Talk about how in 1949 the borough census said that the average income was $3,100, but in the Russell Sage Foundation that same year said the average income was $5,004. So they had to find out how they did this, how they got the answer, and they said you take that and you divide that by 149 million people to get an average of 1,251, and then somewhere down on that number becomes 5,004 for a family of four, because you got to multiply 1,251 times four since you got a family of four, and that's your income.
Another thing about how to statisticulate is when it says about percentages and how it's better to give the figure than the percentage, because one of the things that says is buy your Christmas present now and get 100%, and you save 100%, and that sounds like they're giving it to you for free, but they're actually not. It's just a lot cheaper than it was before. And the reduction is only 50%, and saving 100% is reduced for the new price. But it's true, but they're basically telling you they're giving away for free. And also it says it's 100% cheaper than 4 months ago for flowers, but it's not that they're giving away, it's just cheaper than it was 4 months ago.
It's like, I wonder if people back then actually questioned this stuff, because I'm sure they read, like, especially for the average salaries, like, how do you get $5,000 for one average salary, and then $3,000 for one. Is that like, nobody questioned it, it didn't make any sense. There's a lot of things like lying with statistics that, did people really like believe the lies, or did they just allow the people to publish it? Like, who allowed this to happen?
Another thing about lying with statistics is that some people, maybe they're not educated enough or they care a lot less about math, so they don't try and question or ask questions, or sometimes they're not sure what to ask, so that's why they don't ask questions about things. So I think it's interesting that people, I'm pretty sure when they lie, they're aiming for a particular audience that doesn't pay attention, which may be the vast majority. Basically, I believe that the people who don't, who actually do pay attention to the fact that people lie in statistics is a very small majority, so that even if they try and tell people that they're not telling the truth, there's so many more people who don't care and only want to interested in the thing for what it's trying to prove. Also, when you show people graphs that have a high increase, you're also confuse people.
It also confuses people because they're expecting something to be so high of an increase when in actuality it isn't, because it's only spaced out to make it seem like it's so much bigger than it is. And that's interesting about students.